and a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by listening and checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call, 910-251-6088. We'll have more from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. Well, for those that are subscribers to the Morning Line email, that goes out each and every weekday morning when we have a new show at 6:30 a.m. My opening message this morning was this: strong leaders deliver, weak ones do nothing. EU officials even admitted talks on Russia and Ukraine have moved further in weeks than in the last 3+ years. That's the power of President Trump's leadership. That was not only on full display for everybody to see yesterday, but it was in fact confirmed by said European leaders, who many of them, and we'll get to clips. I've got a dozen clips from yesterday's meeting at the in the White House. We heard over and over again from a variety of folks throughout the European Union, the European countries, the NATO secretary, the European Commission president, that talks have materialized and talks have progressed further in just the last 2 or 3 weeks than they have in years. And that is what sparked the Morning Line email this morning, because it's a complete and total difference from what we've seen in the past. It is completely different from the previous administrations. I'm not even going to call them attempts, because there were none, to bring an end to a conflict, to bring an end to peace, or to create peace, bring an end to the war, create peace. And it's amazing that as this has been unfolding, and I shouldn't say that I'm shocked or surprised, because I'm really not, but I'm generally surprised at least a little bit with the media reaction to what has been going on over the last couple of weeks. Obviously, a big day Friday in Anchorage, Alaska, with the president of Russia and Vladimir Putin making his way to the United States, Alaska, to have a one-on-one, three-hour sit-down meeting with President Donald Trump and other folks from the administration to try and get some of these details hammered out, to try and find some sort of pathway forward to bring this thing to a close. And then, of course, rapidly developing yesterday and over the weekend, we learned that not only would the Ukrainian president in Volodymyr Zelensky, but 7 representatives of NATO and the European Union and those countries, part of the EU, would be making their way to the White House. And that is exactly what happened. Strong leadership versus weak leadership. You can see it play out in front of your very eyes. You did so yesterday. And still, it's not enough. Still, for those on the left-wing side of the political aisle, it's not enough. And one of the things, and I think I talked about this, it was either last week or the week before, one of the big differences that I've seen in this second Trump administration compared to the first is there is no longer this constant attempt, and it made sense why they did it, but there's no longer this constant attempt to try and persuade and win over the very dishonest fake news media that exists here throughout the United States. I've got an example of this. I posted this picture on my Twitter account last night. We'll get into all of the details, but suffice to be said, there is going to be an in-person meeting between Putin and Zelensky, likely within the next week or so, and then potentially a trilateral meeting between Zelensky, Trump, and Putin in the next 2 weeks. That's how good the peace talks have been. So that is the top line, what's going on with everything out of yesterday. You would say, and I think it would be an accurate thing to claim, that that is a pretty significant step forward in the ongoing conflict between Russia and Ukraine. So that's what happened yesterday. I took this picture around 7 o'clock last night. This was what the Chiron read on CNN. Trump on hot mic. I think Putin wants to make a deal for me. That's what Erin Burnett, in all of her great journalistic integrity, that is what she was talking about last night on her primetime CNN program. Trump on hot mic. I think Putin wants to make a deal for me. No discussion or very little discussion of how after 3 years of nothing happening in this conflict, we seem like we are finally getting towards the potential of a peace deal. No discussion on how after 3 years of weak, failed, incompetent, useless leadership out of Joe Biden and the Democrats, we are finally getting both sides in the same room together. Again, could be happening as soon as sometime this week or if not that early next week. Now, we're going to talk about a hot mic comment where Trump said that Putin wants to make a deal for him. Ooh, ain't that scandalous? Isn't that fit the whole Russia collusion narrative? And I filled in for Vince Coakley yesterday morning on WBT Radio in Charlotte. I'll be in again this morning, 10 to noon. If you can't join me live, I'll be taking your phone calls. You can check out the podcast after the fact. And I got a call yesterday from an individual who claimed that the only reason that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin met on Friday is because Putin owns Donald Trump. He's got significant dirt on the president, and that is the reason why that meeting happened. This was not a prank call. This was not somebody who was trying to rile me up or anything. This is a legitimate phone call from somebody that believes that the Russian president has dirt so severe and so significant on the president of the United States that it forced him into a meeting. That is the genuine thought from some of those on the political left. And I might argue that is the genuine thought of those throughout the vast majority of mainstream media in the United States. It would kill them, and I mean kill them, to have to give Donald Trump, Steve Witkoff, Marco Rubio, or anybody else associated with the MAGA movement, the MAGA agenda, it would kill them, literally kill them, to have to give any of them credit for what has unfolded over the last 4 days. Literally 4 days. 4 days. More talk in 4 days than in 3.5 freaking years. And there's only one reason that's happening. There's only one person to look at as to why this is unraveling and escalating the way that it is, and it's President Donald Trump, who has drawn a line in the sand, has threatened incredible amounts of economic sanctions on Russia, continuing to strangle their economy to nothingness. That is why these talks are happening. And it's just so laughable. It's so pathetic, but unfortunately, it's so predictable to watch the media and the progressive left's reaction to this. And you almost are at the point where you might believe that these people want the war to continue. And I might argue that they do. Not necessarily because they're interested in more bloodshed. Some may be. But more than anything else, if the war continues, then that's yet another thing that they can claim that Donald Trump failed on. If the war continues, if thousands of people continue to die, then they can claim Trump failed. And I might argue they are more interested in seeing Trump failing than stopping thousands of people from dying. I think that's a pretty accurate representation of some of those in the media and some of those on the political left. And that is a very sad sign of the political environment that we live in right now, but it unfortunately, I think, accurately describes the situation. You know, as I've had cable news on since about 4:30 this morning, and looking at some of the headlines and looking at the guests and all of the great commentary from those on the talking heads on MSNBC, which, by the way, has a new name, and CNN, it's so unbelievably predictable. This is exactly what you've come to expect from these individuals. It's why the term fake news is so prominent to describe these outlets. Trump was with these individuals until after 7 p.m. Eastern last night. And the best that CNN can come up with is Trump on a hot mic saying he wants to make a deal. Putin wants to make a deal for me. Really? That's how you boil down 4 days worth of talks? The great Aaron Burnett Out Front, or whatever the hell the name of her stupid show is, over on CNN. Out Front. Erin Burnett's Out Front. Great political insight. And we wonder why people are evacuating CNN and MSNBC and many other mainstream news outlets. Because this is the kind of coverage that you get. This is the kind of nonsensical reporting that you get. And it's constant. They do it every day and refuse to give President Donald Trump, the GOP, or the MAGA movement any credit for anything. So instead of me giving you my thoughts and my opinions the entire show, let's actually listen to, what happened yesterday when these various European leaders made their way to the United States. You had Zelensky, seven others, and Trump in a joint about 30-minute press conference. Here's the opening from President Donald Trump. We'll go around the table and hear from everybody.
All of the wonderful things that took place today, we've had a very successful day thus far. Important discussions as we work to end the killing and stop the war in Ukraine. We're all working for the same goal, very simple goal. We want to stop the killing, get this settled. I've just had the honor of being with President Zelensky, and all of the discussions that we've had, we covered a lot of territory. And I spoke indirectly with President Putin today. We're going to call President Putin right after this meeting. I'm sure we're going to have a solid meeting, good meeting, maybe a great meeting. And we're going to try and work out a trilat after that and see if we can get it finished. Put this to sleep, because this is not since the Second World War has there been anything like this.
So there's the President Donald Trump's comments. We'll get into the Putin phone call that happened after we hear and go through all of these clips. The president highlighting two different areas. The first one being, of course, the security protection, the security situation. If these talks are to go forward, if there are to be some sort of peace agreement, some sort of ceasefire deal, this is a big part of it. It's the security guarantees.
The Alaska summit reinforced my belief that while difficult, peace is within reach, and I believe that in a very significant step, President Putin agreed that Russia would accept security guarantees for Ukraine, and this is one of the key points that we need to consider, and we're going to be considering that at the table also, like who will do what, essentially. I'm optimistic that collectively we can reach an agreement that would deter any future aggression against Ukraine, and I actually think there won't be. I think that's even overrated, largely overrated, but we're going to find out. And I think that the European nations are going to take a lot of the burden. We're going to help them, and we're going to make it very secure.
Make it very secure, talking about those security guarantees, talking about the attempt here for predominantly the European Union, because after all, it is an issue that is unfolding over in Europe, for the majority of the European Union and those countries as part of the EU and the UK and other nations to provide the vast majority of those security guarantees, as it in fact is a much more closely regional conflict to them than, of course, the United States. With that, the president continued on some of the issues that we see that continue to unfold. One of the big ones is going to be, well, territory. Does Ukraine give up portions of its current territory to get this deal done? Here's the president on that.
Contact, that means we also need to discuss the possible exchanges of territory, taking into consideration the current line of contact. That means the war zone, the war lines that are pretty obvious, very sad actually to look at them, and negotiating positions. President Putin, you have President of Ukraine, who is you just met a little while ago, and we're going to try and get a three-party meeting maybe as soon as we can. And I have a feeling you and President Putin are going to work something out. Ultimately, this is a decision that can only be made by President Zelensky and by the people of Ukraine, working also together in agreement with President Putin. And I just think that's very good things are going to come of it. So I hope we have a good meeting. And if we can have a good meeting, I'll set up a meeting with President Putin. And if you'd like, I'll go to that meeting. And not that I want to do that, but I will do that because we want to save a lot of people from dying. A lot of people are dying, and we got to save them. We got to save it. 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people sometimes a week. All of us would obviously prefer an immediate ceasefire while we work on a lasting peace, and maybe something like that could happen. As of this moment, it's not happening, but President Zelensky and President Putin can talk a little bit more about that.
And, you know, the president there makes a really good point. It's something I mentioned yesterday, and I'll mention again today. This needs to be hashed out between Russia and Ukraine. The president, as you just heard, is willing to sit in on some sort of trilateral meeting if both parties want him to do so. But when you're talking about outside of the security guarantees, when you're talking about a ceasefire, the potential of some territory being exchanged or swapped for a lasting peace deal with security guarantees, Donald Trump is not able to necessarily sit down and say, well, this is exactly what needs to happen. This needs to be dealt with by both sides, not with the United States. It needs to be dealt with by Russia and Ukraine. And, you know, the rumor has it this morning that the Russian president and the Ukrainian president could be meeting as soon as later this week without President Donald Trump, which I think is probably the good first step. Those two guys need to get into a room, hash out the details, and make it work. It's not President Donald Trump's war to decide who gets what. He has done everything in his power, and I would argue he has done more than anybody else in the last 3.5 years to try and broker a deal. But when the rubber meets the road, when we talk about actual details in this war, it is not the United States that is a party of that. It is Russia and Ukraine. It is their conflict to deal with. Can the United States help facilitate? Sure. And I think we've done a pretty damn good job at doing that. But this needs to be worked out between Zelensky and Putin and their respective governments, not the United States. Trump has done a remarkable job over the last, let's call it month or so, bringing these talks closer together. And it seems like we are on the precipice. And again, manage my expectations here. You're dealing with two relatively, especially with Putin, somebody that is relatively hard to really nail down. Somebody that can be rather, I don't even know the word I'm looking for. He can change his mind relatively quickly. So you're dealing with a very volatile situation and things can change dramatically. You heard the clip yesterday from Marco Rubio. We're going to do everything in our power to try and bring this together, but we can't make any guarantees. And so that is the situation that is unfolding in front of our very eyes right now with this massive meeting yesterday at the White House. Now we'll hear from the man of the hour. I'll note he didn't wear a suit, but he did put a blazer on. Here's the Ukrainian president.
I think that we had very good conversation with President Trump.
Very good.
And it really was the best one. Maybe the best one will be in the future. But it was really good. And we spoke about very sensitive points. The first one is security guarantees, and we are very happy with President that all the leaders are here, and the security in Ukraine depends on the United States and on you and on those leaders who are with us in our hearts. They have been online before yesterday and etc. So a lot of countries on the side of Ukraine, our people, and all of us want to finish this war, stop Russia and stop this war. We spoke about it, and we will speak more about security guarantees. This is very important that the United States gives such strong signal and is ready for security guarantees. The second point, or maybe the first, humanitarian direction, very important to exchange all the prisoners, and I think that President will help, and I was very thankful to your wife again, Mr. President, for the letter about our abducted children, and I hope that really it can be a historic role for the people to bring kids back to the families and be happy.
Get the people families. Back, yeah.
Yes, this is so important, and I'm happy that we discussed it. this track with the President Trump, and I hope that we will find decisions. And then what is very important, that all the sensitive things, territorial, etc., we will discuss on the level of leaders during trilateral meeting, and President Trump will try to organize such meeting, and he said that he will come or not come. Ukraine will be happy if you both
want me there, I will be there. Yeah,
yeah, thank you. And I think this is very important.
And as you just heard there from Zelensky, right, the real sensitive stuff, we're talking about territory, which, by the way, it appears that Zelensky is at least open to that as of right now, which could be a major breakthrough in this ongoing conflict. Discussing things about territory, that is the sensitive stuff that can only be discussed between Russia and Ukraine. Nope, the NATO secretary can't be part of it. Or, I mean, they can be part of it, but it's not their decision. The head of the EU can be part of it. You can put all these world leaders in a room. When it really comes down to it, the two parties that have to agree are not the United States, not NATO, not the EU, none of the European countries that were at the White House yesterday. It is Russia and Ukraine. That is it. Plain and simple. And that's why those two, being Zelensky and Putin, getting in a room together and hashing this out is so incredibly important. And as I might, at this point, I might argue, something that could have been done a year, two, maybe even 3 years ago, if you had somebody in the White House that was willing to broker the deal. If you had somebody that was willing to speak to both sides, hash out the details, get them close enough together before putting those two individuals in the room. That's exactly what President Donald Trump and his team have done over the last couple of months. We'll now turn it over to some of the other individuals in the room, including the NATO Secretary Mark Rutte and his comments before some of those discussions yesterday. Here's the NATO Secretary.
President of the United States, dear Donald, for the fact that you, as I said before, broke the deadlock with President Putin by starting that dialogue. And I think it was in February that you had the first phone call. And from there, we are now where we are today, and that is, I think, if we play this well, we could end this, and we have to end this. We have to stop the killing, we have to stop the destruction of Ukraine's infrastructure.
So there's the NATO secretary saying, stop the deadlock. There's your first a notch for President Donald Trump in world leaders, obviously wrapping their head around and coming to the realization that the only reason that any of this is happening is because Donald Trump broke the deadlock. He was finally able to get both sides towards something in the middle. And there you go. There's the NATO secretary, who's, of course, been incredibly thankful to President Donald Trump over the last couple of months for the work that he's done in getting NATO countries to pony up their share and pay a more fair amount into NATO, besides just making the United States be the largest funder. We heard similar comments from the European Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen. She was also at the White House yesterday. This is what she had to say.
Indeed, we are here, Europeans, as friends and allies. We had a fantastic NATO summit. Together as the two largest and biggest economies in the world, we had the largest trade deal ever agreed. And now we are here to work together with you on a just and lasting peace for Ukraine. Stop the killing. This is really our common interest, stop the killing. And indeed, it's very good to hear that we're working on the security guarantees, Article 5 lies security guarantees, so important.
Very important, and it's one of the big things that came out of the summit on Friday in Anchorage, Alaska, that for the first time, the Russian president in Vladimir Putin was open to the idea of having some level of security guarantees, Article 5, like, not exactly Article 5. Ukraine is not joining NATO, where Article 5 exists, but some level of Article 5-like protections for the country of Ukraine moving forward if some sort of peace and ceasefire deal is met. We'll now continue going around the table. The German chancellor had some thoughts and comments. This is what he had to say.
But now the way is open for complicated negotiations. And to be honest, we all would like to see a ceasefire, the latest from the next meeting on. I can't imagine that the next meeting would take place without a ceasefire. So let's work on that, and let's try to put pressure on Russia, because the credibility of these efforts we are undertaking today are depending on at least a ceasefire from the beginning of the serious negotiations from next step on. So I would like to emphasize this aspect and would like to see a ceasefire from the next meeting, which should be a trilateral meeting wherever it takes place.
So there's the German chancellor talking about the ceasefire. That was one of, of course, the big buzzwords out of the meeting. No surprise there. The president may push back a little bit on that, noting that there doesn't necessarily have to be a ceasefire if you can come to some sort of immediate peace agreement and get some of those security concerns in place. You may not need to go through the process of starting with the ceasefire, then brokering a deal, then getting it all dealt with. So we'll continue to watch and see exactly how those steps roll out. We also heard some comments from the Italian Prime Minister, PM Meloni, at the White House yesterday as well.
I think it is an important day, a new phase, after 3 years and a half that we didn't see any kind of sign from the Russian side that there was a willing for dialogue. So something is changing, something has changed, thanks to you. Thanks also to the stalling in the battlefield, which was achieved with the bravery of Ukrainians and with the unity that we all provided to Ukraine. And the reason why I mention it is that we also have to remind that if we want to reach peace and if we want to guarantee justice, we have to do it united. So that's why it's a very good day, the one we are in. You can obviously count on Italy as it was from the beginning. We are on the side of Ukraine, and we do absolutely support your efforts towards peace.
Well, as the Italian Prime Minister said, something has changed. I can't really put my finger on what that change might have been and why all of these discussions are now taking place. I'm sure it has absolutely nothing to do that Donald Trump is back in the Oval Office and is a kind of expressing and flexing the United States' strength and ability on the international stage to bring Putin to the table, which is exactly what happened on Friday. I'm sure it's got nothing to do with that at all. I'm glad to see that the Italian Prime Minister commented on that and brought that forward. We'll now keep heading down the table. Here's the French President, Emmanuel Macron.
I just have to say here, everybody around this table is in favor of peace. And we work very hard, and we've worked very hard during the past few years to have a peace which is a robust and long-standing peace.
Now, I'm going to stop Macron right there. He's the only one I'm cutting off, and it's not for any particular reason. But, you know, this is a European problem. And this has been something that has kind of bothered me since the beginning of all of this. This has been and continues to be a problem that is much greater to Europe in terms of its immediate threat than it is the United States. And really, you didn't see a whole hell of a lot of European involvement, some countries, but not the entire EU, until earlier this year after Donald Trump won and the discussion began, how much more aid does the United States need to pour into this war? And it was at that point that you had people like Macron and other European leaders run to the cameras, run to the microphones, and talk about how they will do whatever in their power to make sure that Ukraine doesn't fall, and they'll do everything possible to make sure that the evil empire in Russia doesn't take over Ukraine. This has been going on for 3 years. You know, sitting around this table, you can see it for those watching the show or the video version. You can see all of these very influential, strong leaders, some strong leaders, in the White House yesterday. None of them were capable of brokering this deal. I mean, none of them could do this. In the early days of all of this, when you look at the amount of aid that the United States has sent to Ukraine versus the vast majority of the rest of the European countries, it's so incredibly lopsided, it's almost laughable. This is a European issue. You've got two countries, well, one in Europe, that is being invaded by another entity. In the case of that, it's Russia who's invading Ukraine, or trying to, or attempting to. Where was this kind of commentary, this strong leadership over the last 3 years? The only way this was possible was with Donald Trump. I'm not sure these European leaders really cared as much beforehand. And I'm kind of just shooting from the hip this morning on that. But it just seems odd that now, you know, we hear all, oh, we've been fighting for peace and this is what we've been working for. Just doesn't really seem like that, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. It just seems incredibly lopsided.
This is why the idea of a trilateral meeting is very important, because this is the only way to fix it. And by the way, I think as a follow-up, we would need probably a quadrilateral meeting, because when we speak about security guarantees, we speak about the whole security of the European continent. And this is why we are all united here with Ukraine on this matter. In order to organize such a trilateral meeting, your idea to ask for a truce or ceasefire, at least to stop the killings, as we discuss, is a necessity. And we all support this idea. And in order to have such a long-standing peace for Ukraine and for the whole continent, we do need the security guarantees. And the first one is clearly a credible Ukrainian army for the years and decades to come. And the second one is our own commitments, all of us. And we worked very hard during the past few months among the coalition of the willings, with the support of NATO, to build the different pillars of security guarantees and our commitments. And you can be sure that Europeans are very lucid about the fact that they have their fair share in these security guarantees for Ukraine, but their own security is clearly at stake in this situation.
And again, that just kind of backs up my commentary there. We're hearing from French President Emmanuel Macron, that's who you were just hearing from, talking about how not only is there a security threat to Ukraine, obviously there's a war that is going on there right now, but there's greater threats to the rest of Europe. And so, again, why is it that these European countries, and I'm not saying they didn't do anything, I'm not saying that they completely turned a blind eye, whistled, and walked the other direction. That's not what I'm saying. But it seems like if what Macron is saying is true, and these European nations truly feel that there is such an incredible threat from that of Russia, why were they not more engaged 2.5, 3 years ago? I mean, why was that the case? Why was it the United States that was leading the dialogue and leading the charge on the national stage? If it is truly such a threat to Europe as a whole, which I'm not trying to minimize or say is not true. I tend to agree with the president of France and Macron that is in fact the case. So why was it once again that the United States was seemingly the only party that wanted to be involved in this conflict from the very early days? I mean, I'm not going to pull up the chart and show you this morning, but you've seen the amount of spending on the Ukraine war from a variety of countries. The United States blows every other country out of the water. And if we're hearing from Macron and we're hearing from other European leaders about the ongoing threats of Russia throughout Europe, maybe you guys should have stepped up a little bit sooner. I don't know. It's just something that's always bugged me about the conflict. We'll now turn over to the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, which I'll note is not a part of the EU.
We all want peace. The war in Ukraine has had a huge impact, particularly on the Ukrainians who've borne the brunt of it. But it's also had an impact on Europe and on the United Kingdom. There's not a family or community that hasn't been affected. And when we talk about security, we're talking about the security not just of Ukraine, we're talking about the security of Europe and the United Kingdom as well, which is why this is such an important issue. I think this is such an important meeting. As a group, I think we've had a discussion on the phone a number of times, Mr. President, but be able now to be around the table to take it forward. And I really feel that we can, I think, with the right approach this afternoon, make real progress, particularly on the security guarantees, and your indication of security guarantees, of some sort of Article 5 style guarantees, fits with what we've been doing with the Coalition of the Willing, which we started some months ago, bringing countries together and showing that we were prepared to step up to the plate when it came to security. With you coming alongside, the US alongside what we've already developed, I think we could take a really important step forward today. A historic step, actually, could come out of this meeting in terms of security for Ukraine and security in Europe. I also feel that we can make real progress towards a just and lasting outcome obviously that has to involve Ukraine, and a trilateral meeting seems the sensible next step. So thank you for being prepared to take that forward, because I think if we can ensure that that is the progress out of this meeting, both security guarantees and some sort of progress on trilateral meeting of some sort to bring some of the difficult issues to a head, then I think today will be seen as a very important day in recent years in relation to a conflict which has gone on for 3 and a bit years, and so far nobody's been able to bring it to this point. So I thank you for that.
There's yet another European leader talking about how nobody has been able to bring this forward. It was only Donald Trump that could do it. One of the benefits of Trump being part of these discussions and part of these talks, when we get into, and hopefully we do, discussing security guarantees as this continues to play out, if Russia is willing to actually begin the actual negotiating process between them and Ukraine, Trump is going to push incredibly hard on all of the leaders that you saw here at the White House yesterday, including ones that you did not, and make sure that they are the ones bearing the cost and the responsibility of these security guarantees for Ukraine. Again, this is a geographic issue that is much larger for them than it is the United States. I'm not saying it's no threat. I'm not saying we completely wash our hands of it. That is not what I'm indicating at all. But from a security standpoint, this is the European Union's and the European countries' problems to deal with, not the United States. And one of the benefits, and one thing that I'm confident that President Donald Trump will make abundantly clear as this continues to progress, is that the United States is not going to be the one holding the bag on security and physical security and the financing for it. It is going to have to be all of these other countries, Poland, the UK, Germany, France, Italy, Sweden, these other countries, they are going to be the ones that are going to have to step up to the plate and make this thing a reality. It's not the United States problem to deal with. Finishing up the discussion from those world leaders around the table, here is the president of Finland in some pretty nice comments with everything unfolding.
I think in the past 2 weeks, we've probably had more progress in ending this war than we have in the past 3.5 years.
Think about what he just said. This is the president of Finland, and I think it's in this clip, and he kind of jokes, why is Finland even at the table? Well, they share an 800-mile border with Russia. Finland is a relatively small country, but they are literally Russia's neighbors and share an 800-mile border. And so when you've got the president of Finland saying that, I believe we've had more progress in the last 2.5 weeks than we have in the last 3.5 years, that is probably something that we should take pretty severely and take to the bank this morning.
I think in the past 2 weeks, we've probably had more progress in ending this war than we have in the past 3.5 years.
Bingo.
I think the fact that we're around this table today is very much symbolic in the sense that it's Team Europe and Team United States helping Ukraine. And the progress that we're looking out of this meeting is about the security guarantees, which are a big part of this. And then, of course, moving towards a process with the trilateral meeting with you and President Putin and President Zelensky. Some of the international media might wonder, why is the president of Finland here? I think the reason is probably that we might come from a small country, but we have a long border with Russia, over 800 miles. And we, of course, have our own historical experience with Russia from World War II, the Winter War, and the War of Continuation. And if I look at the silver lining of where we stand right now, we found a solution in 1944, and I'm sure that we'll be able to find a solution in 2025 to end Russia's war of aggression and find and get a lasting and just peace. The situation is very difficult, but that's why we're here.
No question about it. It's a very difficult situation, and talks about some of the history, some of the past, and why it's so important. Again, applauding President Donald Trump, which is all that you can do. The left won't. As I glanced over at CNN just a minute ago while that clip was playing, they once again had that headline up about how the hot mic comment from Trump, just completely ignoring everything that's going on, ignoring all of those comments. I am pretty confident that none of this played on CNN. They may have aired it live, but they have not been playing through these clips throughout last night and through this morning, because what would they have to do? They'd have to play an audio clip or a video clip of members of the EU, European nations, thanking President Donald Trump for moving the ball down the field on a conflict that has been a stalemate for 3 years. And they don't want to do that. They will never want to do that. So this is their approach. They'll just ignore it. Rounding out our clips from yesterday's meeting, press conference meeting before the closed door in the Oval Office, here's the president talking about, you know, the possibility of some sort of deal.
In a certain period of time, not very far from now, a week or 2 weeks, we're going to know whether or not we're going to solve this, or is this horrible fighting going to continue? We'll do the best to get it ended. And I believe you have two willing parties, and usually that's good news, but two willing parties that want to make a deal. And we'll journey together, and we'll go over, and we'll see if it can be done. And it's possible it might not be able to be done. On the other hand, it's possible it will, and we're going to save thousands and thousands of lives a week. And so it's something we really have to do. And or at least we have to give it our best. It's all you can do. You can give it your best. But I think we may have a very good outcome.
And again, we think we might have a very good outcome. That's all that can be done here. You can try. You can open the lines of or channels and lines of communication. You can do everything possible to try and bring the parties together. You can't force a deal. These are two sovereign nations, Russia and Ukraine. Them, their leadership, their governments, in the case of at the top, their presidents are the ones that have to get together. And that seems like it's set to happen pretty soon. Reading from Fox News this morning, Trump revealed that following the Oval Office meetings, that happened after those clips that you just heard, he had about a 40-minute phone conversation with President Putin to begin making arrangements for a meeting at a location to be determined between President Putin and President Zelensky. Noting if that takes place, he said the next stage would be a trilateral meeting involving himself, that being Trump, Putin, and Zelensky. The Ukrainian president said he would be open to a meeting with Trump and Putin, or a meeting with just Putin himself, telling reporters after the meeting yesterday, quote, "We confirmed that we are ready for a trilateral meeting. And if Russia proposes to the president of the United States bilateral, and then we will see the results of the bilateral, then it can be trilateral. So as I said, Ukraine will never stop on the way to peace, and we are ready for any kind of format, but on the levels of leaders." While Trump has previously cast himself as a mediator rather than a deal maker, the suggestion that Putin is open to a face-to-face meeting with Zelensky marked the biggest breakthrough in peace negotiations yet, noting that this is a very good step to get us closer to peace. That's not the headline that's running on CNN or MSNBC this morning. That for the first time since the beginning of this conflict, Zelensky and Putin are going to meet together. Again, could literally happen sometime later this week. That's not the headline. Looking over at MSNBC's front page this morning, this is what they're talking about. This is what is on the front page of MSNBC as it relates to Russia, Ukraine, anything related. Their top story, why Trump loves Putin's false mail-in voting claims. Another story, Trump reported that suit demand shows what really matters to him, and it's not Ukraine. There is nothing on the front page of CNN, on MSNBC. This is the front live right now, the front page of MSNBC.com. There is nothing on the front page right now about a meeting between Zelensky and Putin. And in the case of their current homepage, there's nothing even on here about the meeting yesterday. They're talking about suits and mail-in voting claims. That's what is the top story over at MSNBC. There is a reason that Donald Trump calls them fake news. There is a reason that viewership for media outlets like MSNBC continue to be in the toilet. You just had a major breakthrough in a war that has led to the death of over a million people. A war that MSNBC covered very closely for the last 3 years. You don't think maybe it's relevant to have that on your homepage? You don't think that there is a breaking news story there that after the meeting yesterday, after a 40-minute phone call with the Russian president, that we are on the precipice within the next week or two of a bilateral meeting between the heads of two countries that continue to be at war? You don't think that's a relevant headline? I mean, this goes to show you the level of disdain, the level of hatred, and really that Trump derangement syndrome, known as TDS, is very real and very alive. Not, literally not a story on their homepage about it. And we wonder why NBC News is siphoning off MSNBC and why their name is changing to MS Now, my source for news, opinion, and something else. That's what's going on over at MSNBC. Great information. So definitely a hot source for news in the morning. Not even mentioned on their homepage. What a joke. So after the meeting yesterday, you had Marco Rubio on the Fox News channel talking to Jesse Waters. Of course, Marco Rubio is the Secretary of State. Let's take a listen to what Rubio had to say with Jesse.
And by the way, President Trump is the only leader in the world, acknowledged by all the Europeans, the only leader in the world that can talk to both of them and bring them both to a meeting is Donald J. Trump, the President of the United States. He's the only one. And the fact that he's willing to do it is something that every American, including Democrats, should be happy that we have a peace president. We should be proud that we have a president that's made peace a priority in his administration.
But it won't happen. It will never happen. Because they refuse and will never give Donald Trump credit for anything. Plain and simple. A great comment coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. The only reason that NATO leadership is there is none of these countries can afford the fight now that Trump is having NATO financially committed to pay their fair share. That was a big win for President Donald Trump and for NATO earlier this year. You've heard multiple times from the NATO secretary over the last couple of months about how the funding for NATO has been a huge problem long term. Most countries, I think they were required to give, I don't know, it was like maybe 2.5%. The vast majority of NATO countries were not kicking in their fair share. President Donald Trump went to the NATO summit earlier this year, laid down the law and said, not only are you going to pay your 2.5% or 2%, it's going to be 5%, and you better pony up for it. And again, this goes to the point, as we continue down this road of peace with security guarantees, the United States is not going to be bearing the brunt of that responsibility. Will the United States be involved? Possibly. Should the United States be involved? I don't think it would necessarily hurt. But we are not going to be the ones that are solely responsible for security. And if Trump plays his cards right, which I hope he does, and he's got the ability to do so, it will be the European countries and members of NATO that will be doing the vast majority of the funding, both physically and financially, of those security guarantees for Ukraine. The United States absolutely should have some involvement. We've got a vested interest now in Ukraine with that mineral rights deal that was agreed to earlier this year. So the safety and security of Ukraine does in fact have a substantial impact on the United States getting access to some of those rare earth minerals that are available throughout the country is a major win for the United States and a major win for our economy. So should the U.S. be involved? Absolutely. But it should be, you know, relatively minimal, 5, 10, maybe 15%. It should be NATO, the EU, the UK, and the rest of those nations that pony up the rest and make that possible. Not the United States funding like we always do. I don't know, 70, 80, 85%. And then all these other countries, you know, flick in a couple of nickels or dimes or quarters to make up the difference. This is not the way that this is going to roll out. And I hope that that is not the case. So the NATO secretary, we're talking about him. He was on with Laura Ingraham last night on the Ingraham Angle on the Fox News channel. This is what he had to say. This is after the closed door Oval Office meeting that lasted for a couple of hours yesterday afternoon.
Let me first say that this was a very successful day. And I agree with you that President Trump is a pragmatic peacemaker, as you, I think, said. What he did this year, breaking the deadlock, starting the conversation with Putin, but also putting pressure. We have had the NATO summit to 5%, which was a big foreign policy success of President Trump. And then he decided to again have lethal weapons go into Ukraine, paid for by the Europeans. And he put secondary sanctions, tariffs on India. So he's putting pressure, but he is also looking for ways to solve this, to bring this war to an end. So today was very successful. We discussed the security guarantees, and we will work on those over the coming days and then have another meeting virtually with this group of leaders and the president. And then we will work towards this trilateral. And he was able, in a conversation with President Putin, to have Putin to agree to first a meeting between Putin and Zelensky. So they will now discuss where that meeting will take place in the run-up to the trilateral. So all in all, a very successful day.
Well, there you go. I mean, I don't really have anything else to say. You're hearing from everybody across the board, from the leader of NATO, from the other European diplomats that were there, from the president, from Zelensky, from Putin himself. Everybody is saying that these things are going very well. The only people not are the Democrat Party, the progressive left, and the mainstream media in America. Everybody else across the board says everything is going great. Everybody else is acknowledging that these talks have progressed to an unbelievable level that have not been possible over the last 3 years. The only people not are MSNBC, CNN, CBS, ABC, and NBC News. I'm sure the Washington Post, New York Times, and a bunch of those other ridiculous outlets, and Democrats. That's it. So when I'm coming to my conclusions as to what I think about something, when I'm reading both sides of the equation, trying to figure out where the truth lies, I'm once again going to lend the commentary to those that have been in the room, those that have been watching this conflict unfold for the last 3 years, who have watched the deadlock continue to play out. I'm going to lend my thoughts and judgment to those individuals. Again, because I don't really care what CNN and MSNBC think. Democrats, if they truly cared about bringing this to a close, could have attempted to do so over the last 2 years. They didn't. They sat aside. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris did nothing. They sat in the White House, sat in the Oval Office, talked a big game, but never did jack shit about it, frankly. That's what it comes down to. They didn't do anything. And it goes back to my Morning Line email this morning, which if you're not subscribed to that, head on over to the website, nickcraig.com. There is a banner or a link there on the homepage that talks about the Morning Line email. You can subscribe to that. It is completely free. Just punch in your email address and you'll get that each and every weekday morning. And that's why my email this morning, again, read as this: strong leaders deliver, weak ones do nothing. EU officials even admitted talks on Russia and Ukraine have moved further in weeks than in the last 3+ years. That's the power of President Trump's leadership. Don't take my word for it. Hell, don't even take Donald Trump's word for it. Right? Let's completely buy the Democrat narrative here. Trump is a loose cannon, crazy guy, completely nuts, unhinged, out of control. Let's ignore what he says too. Okay. That's all fine and dandy. We'll just take the word of the 7 European leaders plus Zelensky that have talked positively about these meetings and these discussions. Oh, and the Russian president as well. You notice how everybody involved has a different narrative than those on the political left? Literally everybody else. So when you're coming to your conclusions as to if this is progressing in a beneficial way or not, maybe we should lend our ear to those that are in the room. Maybe we should lend our ear to those that are part of the decision-making process rather than some hack like Aaron Burnett or Jake Tapper or Anderson Cooper over on CNN. Maybe we should ignore those ridiculously stupid voices, including the vast majority of those on the political left that seemingly would love to continue the war, would love to see the war continue to rage because they don't want to give credit to President Donald Trump. It is absolutely shameful what these individuals are doing. It is despicable with the coverage of what has happened over the last 4 days. And it is happening for one reason and one reason only. Donald Trump is back in the Oval Office. This is why so many Americans flocked to voting booths last November to once again put Trump back in power. They saw firsthand what weak, useless, feckless leadership looks like. They saw what the Democrats were capable of with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And they found it to be disgraceful. And so they said, we're ready for a change. While we might not love Trump's personality, we might not love everything that he says or does, we want somebody that is strong. We want somebody that's going to make things happen. You know, I had last week on the show, I opened with a monologue, and I'm going to pull my monologue from last week again. And this is what I had written down. This was back on the 12th. You don't have to love everything Trump does, but you do have to love that he makes decisions. Now, with that, some will be good, some will be bad, but decisions are being made. And from the vantage point of getting things done, from the vantage point of making things happen and having accomplishments, the only way to have any of that happen is by somebody being willing to make a decision, willing to try. Is a peace guaranteed between Russia and Ukraine? I don't think so. You're dealing with an unhinged lunatic in Vladimir Putin. You've got Volodymyr Zelensky in Ukraine, who sometimes is completely off his rocker. And you're going to get those two in a room. It's going to be an interesting meeting, no question about it. But I can tell you and state to you this morning, without a shadow of a doubt, we are closer now to any sort of end to this conflict than we have ever been from the first day that it started, plain and simple. There is no room to argue anything otherwise. If you do, you are purposefully either lying to yourself or you're a complete and total moron. One of those two things has to be true, because there's no evidence to back anything else up. So that's where we stand this morning. A big win for President Donald Trump. Big win for the people of Ukraine. We'll hopefully learn details in the next couple of days as to this bilateral meeting between Zelensky and Putin, then potentially a trilateral with Trump being involved. We'll continue to track those details as they unfold right here on the Nick Craig Show. Before we get out of here this morning, I do want to tell you about the law group here in Wilmington and thank them for their continued support. Since 2003, the law group here in Wilmington and their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of our state. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, folks. They are located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088. Or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call this morning, 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate the Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. Before we get out of here this morning, do want to take a look at the tropics once again as we continue to track Hurricane Erin as she continues her progression, now moving northwest at 7 miles per hour. Here is the latest storm stats. This is as of just a couple of minutes ago this morning. The storm does continue. Winds at 115 miles an hour, pressure 955 millibars. So that storm does continue to be probably a lower grade, but still a Category 3 storm. There's the latest track from the National Hurricane Center showing the storm system continuing to move as a major hurricane off the coast of North Carolina. You can see in these yellow areas in the Outer Banks of our state, there is a tropical storm watch that is up for those areas of the fact that the storm is going to pass about 150, maybe 200-300 miles from the coast, some rough shore conditions, a mandatory evacuations for part of the Outer Banks. And here locally this morning, in something that I don't remember seeing before, I know that it's happened. I'm positive that it has with other storms, but I don't remember seeing this. The town of Wrightsville Beach has issued a no swimming advisory this week due to the power and strength of Hurricane Erin. Yesterday, the lifeguards on patrol conducted over 70 ocean rescues of individuals trapped in rip currents. So today, August 19th, that's the Tuesday, through Friday, August the 22nd, there is a temporary no swim advisory for Wrightsville Beach, with the ocean rescue director saying, quote, "There are swells producing powerful rip currents that can create extremely hazardous swimming conditions. The safety of our beachgoers is always our top priority, and we urge everyone to follow this advisory." So if you are going to get out there in the water, you are advised not to do so with some of these dangerous rip currents. Again, fortunately, the storm will not immediately impact coastal North Carolina with an immediate hit or impact like that. But the ocean is definitely rised. The rip current risks do continue to be extreme. So if you've got any beach plans over the next couple of days, enjoy the sand, enjoy the sun. It is highly advised that you stay out of the water due to these ongoing rip current risks as we continue our track of Hurricane Erin. Well, that is going to do it for a Tuesday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us live this morning, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and of course, anytime via our Nick Craig Show podcast. We'll continue to track Erin, the situation between Russia and Ukraine, and more as the show continues throughout the rest of the week. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. You're listening to the Nick Craig Show.